This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Texans OTA started this week, and the media is going to be out there again today. They're out there on Wednesday, going to be out there again today for day three. And so much of our conversation about the Texans this offseason, and Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, by the way, here with Seth Payne. So much of our conversation this offseason has been about the improvement to the offseason, because that was the Achilles heel. That was the weak link, if you will. And that was what they did, I would say, the most work in addressing and trying to remake. And when you talk about remaking, we're talking about the actual scheme and play caller itself, the offensive line coach, the actual offensive line. But the defense is something that I am curious about, in terms of like how it can get better and what areas in which it can improve, because I think it's been real easy to sort of just look to them or put them to the side, if you will, put the defense to the side, because it did perform up to standard. They've got so many young players, so much of the defense there is to feel good about. I just feel like it's easy to overlook some of the ways in which they can improve and get better. And so I wanted to throw that to you, Seth, like some of your ideas. And I know you talked a little bit about this. And even yesterday when we were talking about Will Anderson and his improvement, if you were to pinpoint like an aspect of the Texans defense or a characteristic of this Texans defense that it can improve from last year, from year to year, from last year to now, what would it be for you?
It's really easy. It's just the big plays allowed. And, you know, you can break down to the different reasons for that. But the Texans were top five in so many categories defensively. Their second interceptions, they were top three in tackles for a loss. Yards per play, they were top five. Like, a lot of categories, they were really, really impressive. EPA, they were top five. But in total points allowed, they were middle of the pack. And the one really, really big thing that hurt them was these chunk plays that they allow. So there's two things that go with that. One was just the youth in the secondary. There are times where either Kalen Bullock was playing like a rookie safety or other guys made mental errors. But then also you couple that with the missed tackles. They were one of the poorer tackling teams in the NFL. And a lot of plays that would be a nine-yard reception end up being a 25-yard reception or more when you just miss one or two tackles. You know, we saw that in the Chiefs game, old man Kelsey breaking tackles and getting chunk plays downfield because he's breaking tackles. So those two things, one is just hopefully the secondary continues to mature. The linebackers need to be better in pass coverage, and that might be the biggest ask. I expect the young secondary guys in the secondary to play like more veteran players, but the linebackers in pass coverage, that was an issue last year, especially against tight ends. So the tackling and then just the mental awareness on the back end in a lot of ways could vault them up into being a genuine top five defense.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you ended it with mentioning the linebackers. And also what you said about being able to live with young, especially rookie DBs making some mistakes on the back end. And I would even add to that, Seth, that it was not to say it was a wash, because some of these things that you're talking about, you just can't have. They're inexcusable. But at the same time, you're talking about guys that were making they were feast and famine, so to speak, out there, right? Like sometimes they were giveth and sometimes they would take it away. But they did make plays. Kalen Bullock was probably the rookie I was most excited about going in, and that was just because I didn't know that Kamari Laster was going to be that ready to play. But if you think about them as a combination, super excited about what you got from them as rookies and the potential that's there for them as young players to develop going into year two. But
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned the linebackers, though.
Yeah.
Like that is the thing for me is – I understand that they brought in Azeez Al-Shaair, who we're going to hear from in just a moment, but like, and he's the leader of the defense, a guy that is, you know, a D'Amico guy. They love Azeez, and I love a lot of what he brings to the table, but it was hard to ignore that the linebackers in coverage was really the weakness of a defense that overall seemed to be really strong.
Yeah, and that's the how much better is Azeez Al-Shaair going to get in pass coverage? Probably not much better at this point in his career. Henry Toa, I think, has upside. Christian Harris has a lot of upside if we ever see him on a football field again. So those are it can get better, but then a big part of it, it's with this defense. It's interesting because when you look at their stats, where they have all these splash plays, so many sacks, so many tackles for a loss, so many interceptions, but then they allow all these big chunk plays. Typically, a team like that is a team that blitzes a lot because it's boom or bust. It's feast or famine. They're blitzing, and every now and then they get burned. That's not what the Texans are. They don't blitz a whole bunch. They're about middle of the road in their blitz rate. So they just, they've got a, part of it is mindset because they've got guys that want to attack, that want to get the run stuffs, that want to do all those things that you see some of the blown coverages. You know, I blame it on youth, but man, that first Indy game last year, Jimmy Ward was caught out of position a couple of times trying to run with a guy he couldn't run with because he just had his eyes a little too far upfield. And that's the it's more a matter of psychology than anything else. There's times where the linebackers just need to play a little bit more conservatively. It's better to be a half step late on the run than to allow some, you know, Sam Laporta to dust by you. And that's more of the coaching side of things where it can get better without even necessarily getting better physically as in pass coverage for your linebackers. They can just do a better job with their reads and their keys.
We got a text from the 713. What's the deal with Christian Harris? You mentioned Christian Harris, Seth, and I wish I had a better answer for this texter, but that is one of the more curious things here when we're talking about linebackers and coverage and how they could be better in that area. The guy that is supposed to be is Christian Harris. Like, whether it's if you need an athletic backer, right, whether that's spying on a Lamar Jackson type or actually being viable for you in coverage, the guy that was supposed to be, that we thought that was supposed to be, was Christian Harris or had been Christian Harris. And of course, last year he had the calf injury that limited him for much of the season. And even at OTAs the other day, we'll see what happens today as media is out there going to be assembled today. But on Wednesday, just kind of out there with a hoodie on, involved but not really doing stuff. And I don't have an answer to this Texas question. And I wish that Christian Harris was more so the answer to this question about linebackers and coverage than it feels like he is right now. Right now, he feels like an open question for the Texans. I don't know what's going on.
You head into last season, and Christian Harris was going to be the starter next to Azeez Al-Shaair. And Henry Toa was like, all right, let's see what happens with him. Toa comes in, and Azeez talked about that yesterday, how hard it was for Henry Toa to kind of not really know in any given week whether he's going to be the starter or not. But he improved a lot. He still has more improving to do. But now Christian Harris, I think in the minds of most of the fans I talk to, at least, he's almost an afterthought.
Yeah.
Because it's a big black box. We have no idea what's going on in there, what's wrong with him. Why is this still seemingly a thing long after the season is over, after not really getting any clarity on it at all during the season? Yeah, I'd love to know. I'd love to have some kind of an explanation. Give me a paragraph on exactly what the struggles were, what the specific issue is, and then I won't bother you again. Just let me know somewhere whether Christian Harris has any chance of playing football ever again.
I got a segment built into the show later on, Seth. We're going to do this at 8:40. It is, and I'm mentioning this because I feel like Christian Harris's name is going to come up in this, so this can be kind of just be like a little tease before the tease, but I want to know what Texans that fans have given up on. Like, which of the players, are there Texans players that have been on the team for a significant enough amount of time, not a rookie, obviously, but somebody that you've seen play for the team before that you've given up on? And I got a feeling that this is a name that could come up, but that's something to put a pin in and for the audience to be thinking about for 8:40, about an hour and a half from now.
I was trying like hell to fight the urge to put Kenyon Green in that bucket last year. So I'm not gonna work so hard to give up on people anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
You can trust me on this. I will bail way more quickly. You can depend on me to not depend on me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? It's more so, to be honest, you know, like not to be rude, but to be honest, you know, it's not that we're just, you know, we're not trying to slander anybody. We're just being honest about it. You know, sometimes you lose faith. It happens.
Yeah. Weigh in on the text line for who are you, and then so we'll have a bunch of them ready. But I'm guessing Dalton Schultz is going to be a popular
yes,
one too.
I hadn't even thought about that, but that is probably going to be a name that comes up. We mentioned Azeez Al-Shaair, and we're talking about linebackers, talking about how the defense can improve. This was Azeez Al-Shaair at OTAs on Wednesday talking about the experience with the attendance rate at Texans OTAs.
Yeah, I think when you have a team, especially like this one with a lot of like young talent, you know, a lot of the guys that's contributed for us over the years, you know, especially like last year with this team, it's been a lot of young guys and, you know, guys are kind of like year three, year four, like, and I remember me back in San Francisco and year two going into year three, you know, just like that OTAs, that's really my third year in the league was really where I felt like that OTAs was more crisp, and going into that training camp, it was just like, that light switch just kind of clicked on for me. So I definitely think that with, especially like a young team with a lot of young players, this is a time where it's so slow. It's like learning the basic fundamentals of the game and, you know, the scheme and everything like that. So it gives you a chance for those young guys to really like come along and learn more. And then obviously somebody like myself, who obviously have to communicate the entire defense to everybody. So me being here is important just to make sure that, you know, they're hearing my voice, getting used to, you know, how I call things. Cause you know, you get 2 months away from each other, you know, you get a week away from your mom or somebody and you forget like, oh damn, I forgot. Well, I got to call them at this time. I got to do this. You forget people's routines and schedules. So it definitely is important.
So I definitely appreciate the Azeez Al-Shaair leadership and understand like the importance of him being there for all the communication purposes and can respect what he's saying there. But when I'm listening to him talk about the young players, it does also make me think of what you said about how, he's probably not going to develop into anything else. Like that is the guy that we're talking about as the leader of the defense and the signal caller and the communication guy, who has also probably reached his ceiling in terms of how he defends tight ends and what he looks like at pass.
Right. But okay, I'll go back to Brian Cushing, because Brian Cushing, if you put him in a vacuum and ask him to cover a tight end or something with no other variables around, like Cushing wasn't great in pass coverage. And yet they did a good job of knowing and understanding what Brian Cushing's strengths and limitations were. So it didn't end up being an issue nearly as much as it could have, because they used him to his best strengths. And there were times I remember people would always be kind of alarmed that Brian Cushing would show up so highly graded in Pro Football Focus's grades and pass coverage. Part of that was because they knew what he could do and they kind of restricted it to that. So there is like, Azeez plays like a demon versus the run.
Yeah.
But it's the modern NFL and you gotta balance that out a little bit. And it really is, I think, it little things like just, are you tweaking his depth a little bit or his keys or the way you're preparing for a game? So I'm cool with this linebacking core, but I also understand it's not gonna be the same way it was in San Francisco when you've got Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. And or even the previous iteration, the backers they had back in the day with Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis, like those guys are just kind of physical freaks. So you can't, it's not going to be the same as that San Francisco defense. You got to, this, compared to D'Amico's San Francisco defenses, you are really, really blessed with your cornerbacks compared to, you know, what they had at any given time when D'Amico was in San Francisco, they had a liability at one of their cornerback positions and they made do with it. You got better. So it's not going to be a carbon copy of those San Francisco defenses. You just got to work around what some of the limitations are.
Speaking of the San Francisco defenses and D'Amico Ryans and Azeez Al-Shaair, this was Azeez on how much his background with D'Amico Ryans helps with his signal caller.
Yeah, I think it's big because, like I said, whenever you like get to stack, you know, more time with somebody, and I've known D'Amico since I've been in the NFL. So I think just more years under your belt, and then obviously now going into my second year with these guys, with this group, and the new guys that are coming along, that's exciting because you just feel like, you know, like if you got two chances to do anything, you feel like that second time is going to be better than the first. So I think that's the expectation for myself and for everybody in the building.
Yeah, so I just think about it like this, Seth. It's year three of DeMeco Ryans as the head coach and obviously the DeMeco Ryans Texans defense. But it is year two with this guy being the one to call the plays. And judging off of everything that we saw and heard from last year and carrying over into now, it seems like this is the guy that they wanted all along, communicating the defense and sort of being the general, if you will, of the defense. So I am interested and excited about it. As much as we talk about the need for improvement in specific areas, I am curious on how things look in year two of this guy being the communicator guy and leader guy and the young talent that we were talking about earlier between Kalen Bullock and Kamari Lassiter.
Yeah, no, Aziz as a leader, that's the other part that takes him above and beyond, you know, just either what the stats are or what he is in pass coverage. I think his ability to mentor younger players on the football side of things, I'm not even talking about the life side of things, but just to be that genuine old school middle linebacker that's calling the shots and getting everything coordinated. When you have young players like that, yeah, you can't overstate how important that is. That's why Jimmy Ward still has value to the team, whether he plays a snap or not this year. He's past his prime and he's injury prone, but he is really, really smart. So that part of it, I think the Texans have done a really good job with that. You know, the defensive line, they have a bunch of guys over 30 that are great mentors and kind of coaches on the field for young guys like Will Anderson. And Aziz, and I'm watching him in that press conference, and I just keep thinking about how he's regarded around the rest of the league. And there's just such a huge gap between the Aziz that we've seen versus the perception of him as some kind of psycho headhunter. And the fact of the matter is he can be both. And that's why he is so good as a leader, because he is also a psycho headhunter. He can point to himself, kind of like when somebody comes to talk to you about the danger of drugs as a kid. Yeah, it always hits harder when it's somebody that actually had their whole life destroyed. I don't want to hear Mrs. Crabapple, you know, telling me about how not to do drugs when I know she's never danced with the devil.
Yeah.
But you bring in some guy that lost his money, lost his family, everything else. So likewise with Aziz can talk to these kids about how you gotta dial it back a little bit, just at the last moment.
Yes.
Don't do what I did. I've been through this. You just gotta know how to dial it back just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not taking no advice from you about drugs, and you over there babysitting your margarita. You've been nursing that margarita. It's basically sugar water at this point, and you want to tell me about not saying no. You over here saying no for the most part.
I don't want to be like you, Ms. Krabappel, so why would I take your advice on how to live my life? No, give me somebody that's been devastated by drugs.
One more here from Aziz Alshaair. We're talking about leadership here. This is Aziz on how he hopes to grow in his leadership role.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, like, for myself, I want to be the best. Like, you know, I play with the best. You know, he's one of my close friends, Fred Warner. Play with Dre Greenlaw, another one of my best friends. And so, like, you know, we competed when I was in San Francisco for who was the best at that time and who was going to make the biggest play. And I think, like, my mindset has always kind of been the same. Like, I want to be the best player I could possibly be. I want there to be no doubt. And that's just showing up every single day and doing the little things, especially at this point. You get into year seven and it's like, you know, me and Will were just having this conversation where you get to that point where you're like 90%, you feel like you got it all figured out. And it's like now it's just this 10%. And if you're willing to really try to be great, that 10%, you know, if you get 2% out of the 10 remaining percent, like that can be a huge jump for a player, especially, you know, I'm in year seven now. So I'm just excited because I think the sky's the limit and, you know, you can continue to play your best ball. And that's kind of just my goal is to keep leading, keep being better just overall, and try to be the best that I can for this team.
I feel really good about this defense, Seth. I think it's going to be really good. There are areas of improvement that need to take place that we've touched on. But, man, I just really hope that the offense doesn't waste the potential of this doesn't waste its own potential for that matter. I mean, they've got C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins and Joe Mixon on the offense. Like, I hope they don't waste their own potential and waste their own opportunity, but especially this defense on the other side, I think it can be really good. I think they can be special.
They really can, and that's where it was enticing at times last year where you felt like, oh, wow, they've arrived. They are that defense. But then there were other times where that Lions game is a perfect microcosm of exactly what they were as a defense last year, including the fact that the offense didn't really help them out much. I mean, that's part of it. The offense was so haphazard and bad at times that it was almost impossible to be a really, really good defense. So I'm not putting all the blame on them, but in that Lions game, I mean, you lose a game when you pick the quarterback off five times. Part of it's on C.J. Stroud throwing two interceptions in a row in the second half. Yes, all of that. But you just got to tamp it down a little bit at times and not allow some of these huge plays. And a lot of that, people never like hearing about this because it just feels so boring and old and plain. But tackling is very coachable. Some teams are good at it. Some teams are bad at it. The Texans are the fifth worst tackling team in the league last year. That alone, if you just become credible tacklers, can vault you up into a genuinely elite defense.
Yeah.
What was your tongue twister earlier that you had?
Yeah, I had one too.
Wide
receiver. It's like when you try to put together. Like the back end of the word and the front end of the next word kind of sound a little bit of alike. You're kind of rushing your way from the first word to the next one. And, yeah, so it can happen. Talking can be hard.
You know, the one thing I was kind of joking earlier when I was talking about, you know, Aziz being able to talk to the youth because he's been there. He's been punished for being overly aggressive, so he can talk to the youth about the dangers of being overly aggressive.
Yes, he can.
I was joking about, well, for one, you do – leaders are a lot more relatable sometimes when you see their flaws and you see what the things they're working with, and they're the same things you might struggle with. That defense is chock full of junkyard dogs who have an appetite for football violence. So when there's times where, like, as these players know D'Amico, they don't necessarily know the vicious side of D'Amico. They didn't watch it. They didn't see it. They're too young for that. So when D'Amico, who comes off like a Boy Scout in so many ways, is telling them to back off a little bit, it might not resonate the same way as Aziz Elshire when he says, listen, guys, I know, I'm the biggest offender, but you got to figure out a way to dial it back a little bit. When we first started up this year football team, Jamie Sharper was one of our starting linebackers, and Jamie's an awesome guy and came out of Baltimore where they'd won the Super Bowl and all that. We're awesome defenses. So I loved listening to Jamie Sharper talk about his experiences in Baltimore. And he said, man, when Ray Lewis really took that step forward in as a leader, and as a guy who's going to mentor everybody else, it was when he got out of jail. Like, it was just, man, he'd been through it, and it kind of changed him completely. And he could speak with a certain level of, obviously, credibility when it comes to going through stuff like that.
So
that's my advice to any young leader is get yourself involved in a really sketchy murder situation.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I am curious how much the Texans can raise the level of crazy between bringing back Aziz. Of course, Kamari Lassiter is in the mix for one of those guys that's kind of got that junkyard dog mentality. But then also the addition of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I mentioned that as my favorite Texans offseason move. Like, think about this, Seth. This is going to be a defense that has Aziz Alshire on it and C.J. Gardner-Johnson on it. And Kamari Lassiter seemed like he's got, like, he might have a screw loose too sometimes.
Doing his crazy hitting himself in the head type of, yeah.
And oh, by the way, you're setting the edge. You got the edge rushers in Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., who are at least dogs on the football field for sure.
Well, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's a really interesting one because, all right, he's gotten in trouble, or whether on the field or on social media at times, for just kind of not knowing when to dial it back. But you go back to the Super Bowl last year, and he was the picture of restraint as the Eagles did a masterful job of baiting the baiter. We've all watched Travis Kelce for years and years get away with taunting and everything else, and then drawing a flag when the other guy retaliates. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson was the one that when Kelce got hit on a very clean and legal hit, and Kelce got up and tried to act like basically was trying to get in anybody's face. C.J. Gardner-Johnson just sat there with his hands behind his back and kind of passive-aggressively taunted him by showing that he was a nonviolent resistor. Yeah,
he's really good at that. I can't remember the receiver from a few years back. I want to say C.J. Gardner-Johnson might have been with the Saints at the time, but there was a receiver who hit him in the face twice in front of a referee, and C.J. Gardner-Johnson just stood there. Eventually, his teammates came to his defense, and it kind of turns into a mini brawl, I guess, at that point. And it's the receiver who gets in trouble, but you can be rest assured that C.J. Gardner-Johnson did something to agitate and provoke that moment. But in the moment that you catch on camera, it's just him standing there like, hey, what's going on? I'm just C.J. Gardner-Johnson standing around playing football. I have no idea why this guy's punching me in the face.
It was Wims.
That's
it. The guy from Chicago.
That's it.
Javon Wims.
Man, yeah. Like he's got a way about
him. Never heard from Wims again.
C.J. Gardner-Johnson putting guys out of the league. Oh, okay, so I've got another one here from the text line. 713-572-4610 is the way to get involved with the show. But, Seth, you actually talked about this guy a little bit more when he first signed, but we got a texter on the 832 asking about EJ Speed. What about the EJ Speed addition? How does that factor in? I don't know how much he's going to play. You can speak to this, but I'm curious what you think as far as how he's going to factor into the Texans' defense improving this year.
I think with EJ Speed, he has a lot of those traits that, you know, D'Amico really likes. He's aggressive. He'll make plays behind the line of scrimmage, but doesn't match it in pass coverage the way you might expect. But he is, as his name would suggest, he's very fast and very athletic, and he was like a scrappy guy, kind of like Azeez Elshire, that was a backup and worked his way into a starting role. I'll be surprised if he's the starter this year. You know, we've talked about the issues with the linebackers and coverage, and he might be worse than any of the starters they have right now in coverage. But he comes up and makes plays at the line of scrimmage. He's just not a complete linebacker. So he's a nice piece to have. And it's interesting because a lot of people said, well, they gave him $5 million with incentives to start. It looks like they might plan on him being a starter. No, that's not starting money. That you, a 1 year, $5 million deal, including incentives, is not starter money. That's a guy that can come in and compete and do some good things on special teams. But then also, at some point this year, he probably will start due to injury, but I'll be surprised if he's starting over Toa Toa. I think they think Toa Toa can become more of a complete linebacker than EJ Speed.
From the 281 text message, this is a good point. I don't know how I forgot about this guy. Maybe it was because he was injured to end the season, but I saw him out there getting his run in on Wednesday. Imagine he'll be out there today. From the 281, Petrie is a psycho. Like he's all like handsome and polite and everything, and so you probably like forget. But when he's out there on the football field, he does some dastardly things that remind you of somebody that also might have a screw loose out there.
I'll go through the depth chart really quick, and you'll be astounded. I don't know if we have time for it. If the number of guys that they've got different brands of psycho, and you know, some are more like, okay, well, I'd actually worry about this guy out being out in public at large. Others are psychos kind of like Will Anderson, where he's just wired different and he's 1,000 miles per hour all the time. But he's got a certain level of psycho. I feel like Tim Settle is underrated psycho.
Oh, that's a good
one.
And
I base that almost all on his willingness to talk trash. But he also, man, he kept showing up last year. Danielle Hunter, not a psycho. You know, like the guy that looks like, and thank God, because he'd be the scariest psycho ever. You know, he'd be like the guy back in the day, Alonzo Spellman.
Oh.
Alonzo Spellman for the Bears, defensive end, who is just an absolute freak of nature and certifiably psycho, kids. The point where he walked out of a hospital in January in Chicago, where he was in the hospital by force, if I remember correctly, because he'd gone off his meds. Walked out in his gown in January in Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's who Danielle Hunter could be, but he's the exact opposite. He might be the most sane person on there.
Yeah.
Azeez Elshire, psycho. Derek Stingley, low-key psycho.
Hey.
Kind of scary. Quiet waters run deep.
Underrated psycho.
Underrated psycho.
I don't know if I felt like I had been exposed to this aspect of Derek Stingley until he went upside Dalton Schultz's head in, during training camp last year. What for? What seemed like no good reason, and I got no idea what his real reason might have been. But from where I was standing and from where we were sitting at the time, it did not seem like there was a valid reason. Because like there was a fight before that, and it felt like it had ended at that point. But yeah. Psycho Derek Stingley comes through and just blindsides the hell out of Dalton Schultz and levels the dude.
I could totally see Derek Stingley in a war movie being like the sniper that's super quiet and you would never expect. And then all of a sudden they flash to a scene where, oh my gosh, this guy's he just killed 17 Nazis in 30 seconds with his bare hands.
Yeah, but see that there's something to that though. I would always be worried about this. This could apply to just anything. I would always be worried about the guy or the person that is like super, super good at what they do. Not just kind of good, but like elite great at what they do. And they rarely say anything.
No, exactly.
That's a evil genius kind of element or quality, I would say.
That's why Derek Stingley won an Oscar for that role. because it's always very, when you're just trying to figure out the character the entire time. I still don't know. I don't know how many, like, what's the total word count we've even heard from Derek Stingley since he's been here? Oh. It feels like this offseason, he quadrupled whatever his previous total was. Because he did that interview with The Pivot where he was really comfortable with those guys. And I feel like you saw the real Derek Stingley. Maybe in one of the very few or only times we've seen Derek Stingley really just get comfortable and relaxed.
But Seth,
to the media.
Even that interview that you're talking about, his dad did most of the talking. his dad was in on the interview and did most of the talking. And it's funny because we're sitting there several months back whenever he gets his contract extension doing the press conference, right? Derek Stingley is miles and miles better and more comfortable now in front of us, the assembled media, than he was, say, when he got here as a rookie. And even with that being true, it was still like, man, let's just get out of here, man. This guy doesn't want to talk to us. And like, what's understood doesn't really have to be explained. He's really good. I don't know why we're here. What are we going to say? I don't know what to ask him.
But it was always really cool because it wasn't like a player who just doesn't want to talk to the media because his ego or because he hates the media or whatever. It was just that I think that's just who he is. There was no part of him that wanted the limelight or anything.
He has part of him is shy. Now, I think he's a little bit more outgoing than he's letting on because I've seen him outside of those types of spaces where
Johnson in a lot of ways, you know, like Andre is not, you know, he's not always quiet. There's a different side to it.
Andre's still a little bit understated, kind of reserved, but not always quiet. Derek Stingley, I've seen chatted up as surprising as that might sound to people. I've seen him be downright chatty, just indifferent, like not with me per se, but like in a different social setting that I just happen to be at and observing his movement. I've absolutely seen that. But Derek Stingley, he even talked about at that press conference how he appreciates the fact that the Texans, and he didn't say this exactly, but despite him being the level of player that he is, a front-facing player, like a franchise type of player, the Texans have never really forced him to try to be something that he's not and try to be more vocal or more spirited or have more of a personality, outward-going type of personality than he actually has. They've just allowed him to be whatever he is and just go out there and be really, really good at playing cornerback.
Yeah, and just lead by example.
One
of the best things Derek Stingley had said, I think he said it at one of the press conferences this year, was just basically, you know, leading. Oh, it was after he signed his contract. Leading, you know, just by showing guys that just working at it every day can pay off. And that goes back to what Azeez Alshire said about, hey, I like Azeez Alshire and the way he framed it. He said, hey, man, you get in the league a few years, you're at 90%. And if you can get to 92 or 93%, you're never going to reach your full potential. No human being ever has. But so you got to fight really hard and work at it every day just to get that extra 2 or 3%. I like that from Azeez because it's much better than the old get better by 1% per day. Anybody who understands compounding interest knows that that's unattainable. You're like, okay, you're going to be three times the player you are right now every single year. Doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Azeez has a better understanding of small gains over time.
Oh, man. Texter, right as we're getting out of this segment from the 713, we definitely overlooked one of the psychos on the defense.
Well, Blanket, what I was going to say is the entire defensive backfield, Stingley, Gardner Johnson, Kalen Bullock, Kamari Lasseter, Jalen Petrie, I would throw Jimmy Ward into that. They're all psychos in a good way.
Yeah, well, I this is another thing that I think we can revisit at some other time, but another texter, 281, says potentially the best Texan secondary in history. I'm not going to put that on them now, but if you want to just use the caveat of potential, I think the potential is certainly there because Derek Stingley's a part of it, and he's probably the best cornerback that you've ever had on top of all of these other guys that we're talking about. But I don't want to miss this other psycho that we forgot about, Seth, from the 713, Danico Autry. How do we forget about the – don't they call him the junkyard dog or a bad MF? Or what did Nick call him last year?
Like he said a bad MF-er, I think. Yeah.
Scary dude.
With Danico – You're exactly right. I was going through the starters. I think I would have hit him. I guess part of it is that he just had that long suspension, the injury, and it just felt like we never got full Danico Autry other than in spells. So hopefully this year we see the full psycho Danico Autry.
Yeah, definitely a psycho. I mean, we probably got enough receipts of just what he's about from him playing in the division for so many years. He is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott. This is Payne and Pendergast. And coming up next, we didn't hit this during headlines, but Yordan Alvarez apparently is close to coming back. How close? We'll talk about that next on 610.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast here with Seth Payne. And the bad news for the Astros last night was that they got boat raced, got run out of their own building. It did happen. But the good news was before the game, we find out, and this is something that we were talking about yesterday, like just not feeling like we had a good sense for how close or not close Yordan Alvarez might be to returning to the Astros lineup. I even lost count of how many games he's missed, Seth. Once it got past like 20, 22, somewhere around there, and we're past that, I just stopped counting. Guy's been gone for a really long time. But according to Astros skipper Joe Espada, and Yordan Alvarez also spoke via his translator with the assembled media ahead of yesterday or last night's game as well. But according to Joe Espada, Yordan Alvarez, who's been out with a hand injury, is very close to returning. And even the best that Espada has seen him, he said this is the best that he's felt since he's been injured. This was Joe Espada meeting with the assembled media just yesterday.
Very close. Yeah. And this is the best he's felt. So obviously hit him machine. He ran the bases. I think he's getting really close. This is the best I've seen him. This is the best he's felt. So really good news.
So you face some pitchers tomorrow?
Yes. So we are. Yeah, we're going to have some pitchers here. So he's going to roughly around 50 pitches. So he could jump in there. Some of the guys and track some pitches. So that means that once he's ready, we're not going to need a rehab assignment. That will be his way to kind of check that box and get ready for games.
So no need for a rehab assignment whenever he's ready. And whenever that time does come, which they say is close, he'll be right into the lineup. So my question to you, Seth, is given that it's the Astros, it still be the Astros. How much do you trust what you're hearing? Does this make you feel better? I consider this to be good news when I heard it. What say you?
I think they've been pretty transparent with this other than, you know, it's these hand injuries can go a million different directions because of the complexity of the hand. But he's been out there doing a lot of work for a while now. And Espada has said that he's taken batting practice multiple times per day at times. At this point, it feels like the thing that's probably limiting Yordan Alvarez is that they want to be absolutely certain that this doesn't become a recurring problem like it was in 2022. And the next big follow-up, though, of course, is always going to be, all right, he comes back. He's healthy. He's done everything that Joe Espada just talked about. He's also hitting .210 on the season, .646 OPS. He has not been anywhere close to the classic version of Yordan. If most of this has all been related to the hand, then I feel pretty optimistic that, yeah, I don't think for the first time in his life since he's been in Major League Baseball, Yordan Alvarez is going to finish the season batting .210 with a .646 OPS. So I trust that he's going to come back. This does not feel one bit like Kyle Tucker or on the Texan side of thing, Christian Harris. We've seen him out there running around getting all these reports. I think they're just being extra careful to be sure that he doesn't have a setback.
Yeah, I think you bring up the more astute and even urgent point, which is, okay, yeah, obviously you'd rather have Yordan Alvarez in your lineup than not in your lineup, but the follow-up and the next logical question, like you mentioned, is, okay, once he's in the lineup, what's it going to take for him to get back to being good again? Like, the answer to whether or not his struggles so far or just underwhelming play by Yordan's standards so far, how much of that has to do with the injury and how much does it not? How much of it is just like rust or kind of getting into the groove, getting into a rhythm? It's early and all of that, and him just not figuring it out, because we've seen healthy players struggle as well. Like, how much of it is the hand and how much of it is just Yordan needing to get back into some kind of groove? And then to that end, if it's more of a rhythm type of thing, how much did being out with the hand injury screw up whatever rhythm he might have been trying to figure out when he was still healthy? So
right, yeah, there's always the chicken and the egg of, okay, what exactly if he hurt his hand because he was trying to tweak or alter or was uncomfortable in his swing or something like that. I mean, this has been the longest drought and longest stretch of bad performance we've ever seen out of Yordan Alvarez. And just to put it in perspective, like, if you look at OPS plus, the average baseball player is 100. In Yordan's best season, he was 188. The last couple years, he was 170. So 100 is the average baseball player. 170 is really, really high. This year, he's at an 84. And I mean, it's just so far away from anything he's ever struggled with before that it's almost impossible to believe that it's anything but the hand that must have caused it. Yeah. I feel I've got 85% confidence that you're going to see, at the very least over the last two-thirds of the season, above average baseball player, and probably more close to like actually classic Yordan.
I do feel like the Astros, for as pitiful as the offense has been at times, like, they've picked it up as of late, you know, last night notwithstanding, I wouldn't say, but like there is something to be said for the Astros that they've been able to kind of hold things together offense. Like, the strength of the team is the pitching, again, last night notwithstanding. But their starting pitching has been pretty good, even as it's been injured, and their bullpen has been excellent, again, last night notwithstanding. But even the offense has, like, held up to be middle of the road, middle of the pack average. Like, they're slightly below average in run production, but in terms of, like, run creation, like, weighted runs created, or WRC plus, since you and I are the stat nerds of the station. Like, this is one of the advanced stats that tries to measure how well of a job you do at creating runs. And they're right there in the middle of the pack. And that is despite not having Yordan Alvarez for 22 plus, get more than 20 games or so now. And again, as we mentioned, even when he was around, he wasn't that good or wasn't the typical classic Yordan. So my thought is, hey, it is a cool thing, or at least a positive, that they've been able to kind of withstand this. Like, there have been times when they've been overly reliant on, say, Yordan or Jose Altuve or one or two guys that's carrying the lineup. And certainly we've seen that during stretches this year as well. But they have overall been able to withstand both not having their best hitter, and even when their best hitter is out there, not necessarily being their best hitter. If they can get a healthy Yordan back, and then we just kind of see how that goes. Like, you're adding a player of this caliber to an offense that has been able to kind of just not plummet and stay above board or kind of tread water while they figure it out with Yordan.
Yeah, and you know, the other, the big saving grace, at least so you can have one lefty in the lineup, is Victor Caratini. And he's had a very, he's batting 299 in the month of May. I've wondered with Caratini, okay, but does that change a little bit if he starts to see more left-handed pitchers? If Yordan comes back and you start seeing more lefties, because they at least have a couple lefties and one of them's Yordan Alvarez, does that change? Because he doesn't, you know, he kind of ambushes a lot of these pitchers with being the only lefty in the lineup and them having to adjust. For whatever it's worth, Caratini's pretty equal throughout his career in lefties versus righties. So this is, I mean, this is just a genuinely good stretch out of Victor Caratini, I think.
Yeah, well, I've been on this, man. And look, Yainer had a moment, you know, last night, but I am still putting a pin in, since we're talking about lefties and Yordan coming back, I am still putting a pin in the potential for Victor Caratini to Wally Pipp Yainer Diaz, who has, like we mentioned yesterday, has the greater upside, has much more potential as a hitter than, you know, anybody that could potentially play ahead of him right now. But right now, for a lineup that is as right-handed heavy as it is, especially with Yordan out, and then again, the defense with Yainer not necessarily great, doesn't necessarily stand out. I could just see it. They need another left-handed bat. The difference in defense feels like it's negligible, if not better, with Victor Caratini. I'm not saying he's going to be your everyday catcher, but it is something to put a pin in.
I like your rewriting of Wally Pipp scenario, because in your Wally Pipp story, Wally Pipp comes back and replaces Joe DiMaggio or Lou Gehrig. That
hey, I'm not here to make history. I'm here to rewrite it. Yeah, that is a bad job.
Not that Yiner's the next Lou Gehrig or anything, but yeah, the older player comes and replaces the younger player.
Fair enough. But back to the Yordan point though. This is massive. I think that he's close, and I would respect what you said about how they've been a little bit more open and transparent when it comes to this one. Like, it doesn't really feel like there's a bunch of shenanigans going on, other than the fact that the hand injury keeps popping up and I don't understand it. Like, I'm not a doctor, not even a medical guy, so it would make sense that I don't fully understand. But it's an issue that feels like one that just is either lingering or keeps popping up. I can remember going into 2023 spring training, Seth. So, like, they won the World Series. He'd had the hand injury and the issue throughout the 22 season. But who cares? Who remembers now? Because they won the World Series. He had all of these cool moments in the postseason. And we're all happy. And we got parades. And we're celebrating. But going into spring training in 2023, he had hand problems again. And he was limited in spring training. And that was just 2 years ago. And now fast forward to today. And it's continuing. And I can remember back then part of the story was, well, they had elected to not have surgery. They're not going to operate on it. And I'm like, well, if it's going to be an issue again 2 years later, I wouldn't mind if you revisited that. Like, what's going on with this?
My personal experience with this is that I had a similar situation, and that for 2 years of my career, I had my hand would just lock up on me at the wrist.
Okay.
Like, it would just all of a sudden, I couldn't move my hand at all. And they did imaging and they tried to figure out exactly what was wrong with it, and they just couldn't. And I would get massage on it and stuff and try to, you know, maybe loosen things up. I have no idea what fixed it, but it stopped being an issue. Now, I wasn't trying to swing a baseball bat. I could just, and it would kind of go away, but it was just some weird glitch that if I had been a baseball player, it could have been devastating. Because it was my left hand too, so it wasn't as big a deal. But I don't, like, this is the thing, and this is where I kind of try to side with the teams sometimes when people get agitated about the teams not giving a whole lot of answers. They don't have all the answers all the time. Medicine is not an exact science. There's sometimes you just can't figure out what the hell's going on with a guy, and just splicing them open and seeing what's going on in there is always like that's not always the safest course of action. Yeah, I hope they figured something out about it, but it doesn't feel like they actually have, and you just got to cross your fingers and hope for the best.
Fair enough. On my part, it is the lack of logic from the irrational fan. It's just like, man, I root for the Astros. Fix my Yordan. You know, sometimes logic and reason kind of goes out the window, and the urgency is just that. Like, it's just like, man, I want this and feel like I need this to be fixed. All right, he is Seth Payne. I am Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast. I want to circle back to this favorite Texans offseason move. We got a few answers from the text line. We'll revisit this. That is next on Sports Radio 610.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.